185milessouth.com.
Smash that Patreon button.
What's up, everyone? 6'2", what you gonna do? The mighty, mighty Posse Chris, he's gonna be on the East Coast this week. So you gotta go check out his band Change. They are playing Thursday, May 19th, Ashbury Park, New Jersey, Bond Street Basement. It's gonna be Berthold City, Change, Fuck It, I Quit, Sunstroke, Never Again, and What's Up. You know the boss is gonna be there. He's gonna be slamming. Also, Friday, May 20th, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, at the Yard, is Change, Struck Nerve, Berthold City, and a band with graffiti font that I can't read, so you know they're sick. Also, Saturday, May 21st, Brooklyn, New York, Gold Sounds, is Change, is Perfect World, Berthold City, Death Spiral, and Locked Inside. Gotta check that out. And Sunday, wrapping it up in Wallingford, Connecticut, that's May 22nd, at the Wham Leg, it's Berthold City, Change, Hard Feelings, and Born Cursed. So everyone, go say what's up to Posse Chris. Go say what's up to Ito, big friends of the pod, and support them. Support Berthold City, support Change. Also, we're talking the hard style this week on the pod, but I just wanted to address something. Crowd killing is lame, you know? Like, whatever, get down, do your thing. But as someone that's been, you know, playing in bands for 20-something years and going to shows for just as long, those people up front, like the people in the first few rows, like those are the real writers. Like they're the ones taking all the hits, like the stage divers and shit. And they're up there singing along. And it's like, it's a problem in like modern hardcore is like that fucking horseshoe, dude. You know, it's like symptomatic. You see these huge ass shows, right? And it's like, you don't have like rows and rows of people packed up to the front. That is like the true illness. Like a bunch of dudes singing along, a bunch of people getting buck, stage diving, whatever. Not trying to tell you what to do. It's just my opinion. That shit's lame. And there's like an extra level of lame I've seen recently. So like not only like foos in the crowd killing, but what's up with the foos coming off the stage like from behind an amp and like socking dudes in the front row? Like literally, dude, you might as well just write, "I'm a new jack with a micro penis" on your shirt. Because that shit is fucking weird, you know? Again, it's like the people up front in the shows, they're the ones taking the lumps. They're the ones that, like, you know, the people in the bands, like, love the most, right? They're packed up front. No one wants a horseshoe when you're playing, you know what I mean? And people that want to stage dive and shit, they want people to land on. So, like, I don't even know what the fuck that is. That's, like, taking some fucking bullshit to the next level. And, you know, much love to you, if that's you. I hope you, you know, find a true friend, man. Find love in life. You know what I'm saying? If you're in San Diego, hit me up. I'll take you to lunch. I'll treat you like a human being. Maybe if you surround yourself with some love, you won't act like that. Because that's just a shitty way to act. You know, hardcore is like, it should be a bunch of fucking weirdos getting in a room together. And it's like, yeah, there's chaos. Yeah, like people should get like fucked up in the pit and get loose and get crazy and dive off the stage, land on heads. People are going to get murked, right? But it's like it's an organized chaos and people are like there for the same reason, right? People from all different walks of life and backgrounds and everything should come together. Like you're in the same room for the same reason, right? And that's for the music. That's for the message. That's to find like common bonds with everyone. You know, and I just think that behavior is like, whatever. Everyone do what the fuck you want. It's no big thing. But, you know, I think it should be addressed, you know. So it is what it is. Don't get at me. And let's get on with the pod. South, a hardcore punk rock podcast. What's up, everyone? This week on the pod, we are talking hardcore. Helping out, you know him, you love him. It is the best dressed man on the pod. It is Daniel Sant. What's up, Dan?
Brixton, Riot, Riot, Toxteth, Riot, Riot.
Also, 6'2", what you gonna do? It's the mighty Posse Chris. What's up, Chris?
What's happening?
All right, let's jump into it. Dude, we're talking hardcore this week. That's capital H-A-R-D, lowercase core. And I'm so excited to do this pod. We gave Ben a break as to not punish him. And we're just doing this, the three of us, dude. What's up? I'm excited because we get to talk some stuff that we don't normally do. I try to be like democratic on the pod and spread it out so kind of everyone has a piece and likes something. But I couldn't do this to Ben, dude. So we gave him the night off. He's having a nice vegan spaghetti dinner with his lady. And that's that. Now, it was a little over a week ago, Terra put out their new LP, Pain Into Power. And we all agree, any year that Terra puts out an LP is a good year for hardcore. This is a great Terra LP. So I think 2022, great year for hardcore. Dan, what was your take on this LP?
It is, I think, the strongest Terra output for a while. And then the thing about it, like, you know, I've sat with it a few, you know, I've listened to it constantly for a few days now. And it's so interesting to me, the variety that's on here while it's all still extremely Terra, you know? Except for perhaps the Can't Help But Hate song with the Corpse Grinder on it. That one is more outside of Terra's box, it seems. But, God, there's some really good songs on here. And then there's a couple that are still coming around on me. Like, there's nothing bad on here. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing bad at all. But there are certain ones that I absolutely love right out the gate. The Hardest Truth. Jesus Christ, that song's awesome. The Unashamed. Crushing things. And what I love about this is the, because, you know, we say this a lot, like Zach and I, that we love when songs are referential of hardcore and the brotherhood and the sisterhood. And I love the way that they do the vocals for the sisterhood part. So cool. I love that element of it. And it just goes to show that's why Terra is 20 years deep and they can still grab your attention, hold your attention, and make you want to run through a fucking wall. Like, this is recorded really nicely. The only thing I'll say is there's a little bit of, I don't know if it's like Vogel doing double vocals a lot at certain points, but it seems slightly affected. There's a little bit of an effect, but that could also be just me listening to it in my car. I can't wait to have it on vinyl where I can really just play it loud, and then maybe that'll sound a little bit different. But there were a couple times where I would hear the way the vocals were recorded and it seemed a little produced, for lack of a better descriptor. Do you know what I mean?
I think what some of that could be is just, if you listen to the way that he attacks these songs, he doesn't let them breathe at all. And I think that's intentional because they're just trying to do, like, this album is a short blast of energy. And he's really, like, kind of million words a minute on here, which is awesome. Like, it's a very aggressive flow. But I think in the modern era, that leads to doing a lot of punch-ins. So I think that might be what you're picking up, is he might be kind of going line by line because, you know, he's got the perfect hardcore voice, dude. You got to keep it strong in all the points, right? So it might just be that there's a lot of punch-in, and then when you're mixing that in, it sounds a little produced.
Yeah, because they're probably doing it in like Pro Tools where they're like ending the wave of that one line and curving the wave of the other, and it might, that overlap might be just doing that because that's something that happens with like a digital fix. But I mean, his performance on this is just unreal. Like, the backups are placed really well on all the songs. And you know what is really exciting? This goes back to something we've discussed a couple pods ago, is that we talk about like how certain songs are released early and then you get the record and maybe you're not as excited because perhaps they've stoked up the best ones for you to listen to. And then, you know, you see where they fit into the thing. Well, I can happily say that the two that were out before this dropped are my like two least favorite, and everything else I'm just chef's kissing like crazy. The other song that took me a little while to get into just because of its different manner of it was the On the Verge of Violence. And what is so funny is like that On the Verge of Violence, when it goes to the mosh of that, there's no verge. Like, violence is going to happen. Absolutely, you know? And there's a full-on, like, straight-up, which is funny because Terror is Terror, and they've always led the way with just crushing, amazing, energetic, brutal hardcore. But there's a little bit of what is now that has crept in to this. Just, you know, on a subconscious level, but there's a total full-on beat-down mosh part on here. And you know what? Listeners, if you've not checked this album out yet, and I'm sure you have because it's Terror, but, you know, play it again because they're the fucking best. They're 20 years plus, or probably 20 years, 21 years deep now, and it's not like a band that's been around 20 years and you're like, oh, yeah, they got another record out or anything like that. When you know a Terror record's coming, you get fucking psyched and you know that they're going to be coming through soon and they're going to just destroy. So, you know, they never let you down. I love this.
You know, with you saying like the beatdown part on the Verge of Violence is them staying fresh, I think part of that is, you know, we got to give respect to Todd with doing Nails, you know, 10 and more years ago. They have like those big suffocation parts. And actually, like, there's a whole strain of like death metal called slam metal that is basically like basing their whole style off like the first big mosh part off the first Suffocation album. And with Nails, like Todd, he had some parts that sounded like they were right off Suffocation albums. And so I think that with him writing this, you know, it's kind of like, it's not necessarily them being influenced by what's now. It's Todd writing, yeah, like kind of definitely what he did that maybe has influenced what's now, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Nails has influenced San Jose, which is influencing elsewhere, et cetera, right? With Long Island and you know, Nails casts a big shadow. The funny thing is, though, when I listen to this, I do hit, except for that song that is pretty much death metal, you know, the one with Corpse Grinder on it, I do just hear like epic hardcore, and it's rad of you to like frame it that way, because I hadn't like pulled that aside to think, oh yeah, well, Todd wrote a ton of this, so maybe that's the thing. I was just thinking of Terror in 2022 kind of, you know, providing a couple of breakdowns that are so prevalent in 2022. But it is, yeah, you've totally like, you've learned me, because it's true.
I mean, Todd writes like the first two Terror records, right? But, and then he does Nails. But Nails doesn't really go, I would say, like full on into death metal until maybe the third 12-inch, you know? So like it is separated by Terror from like 7 years. So I can understand why that connection wouldn't be there. The other thing I want to say in regards to what you're talking about is, dude, I actually think that Corpse Grinder song is like one of the best on the album. And I think one of the things that makes this album so great, there's two things. One is just that all the fat is trimmed, right? It's a 10 song record. And, you know, I talked this on the pod last week, the three-way pod with the This Is Hardcore podcast and the Post America podcast when we did our little three-segment pod. But I really think the last couple of Terror records were, like, phenomenal. But, like, they might have just had a few too many songs. And I think that's, like, one of the things that makes this so good is it's, like, stripped down. It's like a heavyweight in MMA, like, hanging around, like, you know, top five, you know, but he's slimmed down. Now he's, like, at 205. He's kicking ass. He's the champion again. You know, it's like this 10-song, like, palette is what we need. You know, don't necessarily need 14 songs. Like, I would rather listen to 10 songs twice than listen to 14 songs once. You know, like, I don't know why that is, but that just is what it is. And the other thing is, I think that this album is kind of is back heavy in a way. Like, my three favorite tracks other than the first track are probably That Can't Help But Hate, The Hardest Truth, and On the Verge of Violence, which are like song number what, 7, 8, 9. That's pretty wild for a 10 song record, you know, like to have someone like their favorite songs weighted that hard on the back end. That stretch is just like a stretch of brutality, and I absolutely love it. Chris, what are your overall thoughts on this record? And then we'll dive into some of the tracks.
I'm glad you asked. I mean, just to echo everything you all have said, like, this is definitely kind of a Terror Does It Again kind of scenario. I love how much fast is on this. It's pretty blazing in parts. And another thing that I dig about it, it sounds real grimy while still being like hard and heavy, but like, you know, you think about some of the most recent Terror records, they sound real clean and, you know, still heavy and big. But like, this sounds a little dirtier. And I think it adds a cool element. Honestly, if I had to compare it to a previous Terror record, it kind of reminds me of Always the Hard Way a little bit. Like, maybe not the songwriting and like the song structures, but something about like the griminess of the recording kind of makes it remember or kind of makes me feel like that record.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to wait until we get into some of the tracks, but I did want to call out two tracks. My favorite is Prepare for the Worst. It's just a really cool creepy crawl, kind of slow and a heavy intro, and then just blazing fast and some cool sing-alongs at the end. And then one other thing I noted, and you guys kind of already touched on this when you talked about, you know, Nails and their influence maybe on the Bay, but, you know, Terror's always been a mosh band, but they've always been kind of a modern take on Madball more than, you know, more than like metal influenced mosh metal or anything. But on Pain into Power and maybe a couple other parts, but Pain and Power is the one that really stood out to me. There's like a total modern beat down mosh part that, you know, could be like a Tsunami riff. And I kind of came away from it thinking like, maybe they're like, what's up, Youngbloods? We can write this modern Igno riff too.
Yeah. That riff is ridiculous. The other thing is, like, they cut it up so nicely. Like, there's two songs that have, like, two-step moshes, you know? So it's, like, the beatdown stuff is, like, cut up with, like, the two-step, like, more up-tempo mosh stuff. So it's cool. And that opening track, Pain into Power, good God, it's a perfect hardcore song. You know, a minute long, so much stuff tucked into there. You know, start out blazing fast, a crazy mosh part. You know, like, the ring out call. It's not a ring out. It's like, it cuts out. And then like when he's like, true, blah. And it's like, fucking fuck. Like, it blew my hair back and I'm bald, you know, like that shit is wild. Yeah. And then that Unashamed, like the big sing along at the end, super, super ill. I love like the bass drum, like the bass with the drum buildup on the third track, The Balanced Contempt. And, yeah, dude, 1,000 Lives, mid-tempo banger. Like, this thing has it all. It's just like so much tucked into like such a small little record. I absolutely love it. I think it's probably their second best record, you know, other than Lois Lulo. But I do attribute a lot of that to it just being so stripped down and such like a shorter listening experience. I just think for so long, hardcore had been stuck in like that mentality of what an LP is, what a record is, and so forth. And it's like, if you're going to do an LP, you have to put out X amount of content. And it's like, that really never fit for the style, right? Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, we need to put out X amount of music if it's going to count as an LP. It's like, I don't know, man. I think that might be like one of the winning moments of the digital era, is that like people can cut their output and just have it be the absolute best stuff they can produce instead of trying to like create 30 minutes of music, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I think the first time I was listening to this record, like, I got to the end and I was like, wait, did I accidentally pause it? Is it over already? Well, damn, better listen to it again. You know?
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. And that's the win, right? We've talked about that on the pod multiple times now. Like, the win in modern hardcore is putting out a record that you want to listen to the whole way through. And you want to just, instead of having it hit that like Spotify algorithm, you're like, dude, I'm going to put that on again. You know? And this is a record that I've done that multiple times for. I've listened to it twice in a row, multiple times. And so, you know, it's great. You know, Dan, how you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm very much agreement. Like, just give me something that is all killer and no filler. And I don't care the length, you know. And maybe if it goes too long, even if it is all killer, it just might, my hardcore attention span might just drift off. Even if you're giving banger after banger, you know. I love a short, sharp shock. With no frills and no, like perfectly said, no fat. Although, you know, I'm not trying to fat shame any other records. I fucking love it. Like, I'm just thinking about A Thousand Lies right now and just how madball that is. Like, that riff, like when they went to learn, you know, to, I guess, if Todd wrote that one as well, to show the rest of the band, like, they must have just been like moshing in the fucking practice room. Like, that riff is so good.
Well, the wildest part of that song is like that final riff, like the last 20 seconds when it goes all like Candiria riff. Like I said on the pod last week, it's like my brain, when it hits that part, it's like it cues up like one of those memes where like it shows like a confused person's face with all like the math problems in the background. You know, like, what the fuck is happening here? You know, it's like, but I like it.
Are you talking about the Zach Galifianakis?
There's two I can think of. There's like one where it's like just some normal white lady. And I think she might have been on like Parks and Rec or something. And then the other one is like this MS-13 dude with like a pencil in his mouth. Like, those are the two. But, yeah, I'll send it to you after the pod. All right, Chris, final thoughts on this record.
Rips, nicely done.
Hell yeah. Dan, final thoughts.
I mean, just think the way Prepare for the Worst comes in with just that kick and the riff just being so nasty. I mean, I'm going to spend a lot more time with this LP. It's you referenced the last couple Terror records ripping, you know, before this, and that's true, but they've always had like the two standout tracks that have led the way. This one, you can dive in on everything and love it. And I think that is a testament to you, you know, what you just said, like, this might be the second best Terror record of them all. And it easily could be, which is so fucking sick to think 20 years after the first one, the second best album could be getting recorded and put out, you know? I'll have to spend a little bit more time with it to see if I agree that it is, but it's definitely in the conversation.
So, y'all. All right, I wanted to pivot this to, like, a brief conversation just on, like, legacy bands and how bands work now in the modern era. You know, we're 40 years deep into hardcore, and it's impressive. Like, the way I think about it is, like, with the 70s and then the 80s, there was lots of, like, people that, like, came in and out of hardcore a lot. You know, like, the true hardcore tourists. And, but, like, maybe around the late 80s, like, you think about, like, Mandel's generation, like, a lot of people that came in that era, like, became lifers, right? Like, they're still around. And then a lot of people that came around in our eras, which vary from, like, Daniel in the early 90s to Chris, early mid 90s, me around 96, like, there's a lot of people from our era that are like lifers. And bands have kind of been the same way too. Like, you know, back in the day, you know, a band would put out like a demo or a 7-inch and flare out, or maybe they do a 7-inch and LP, they flare out. But in like recent times, bands have figured out a way to like stay together longer, put out like good LPs. Like, think about it. Back in the day, like, how many bands could put out like 2 or 3 good LPs? Like, it was basically like unheard of. And now, like, there's a fair amount of bands that can do it. And I just wanted to toss it out there. Like, what is a legacy band? Is that like a term of endearment, or is that kind of like a okay boomer thing, or what? Like, Dan, what do you think?
Well, you know, going back to what you said, like, coming out of the 80s, it was almost it was sick of it all only, almost, really, if we're talking like straight up hardcore, you know, that we're putting out 3 to 4 great albums. No one else could really do it. And I mean, now I think what really works for a lot of these bands, like a Madball or a Terror, or I don't know, for lack of a better term, even like a Alkaline Trio or something, is that they can do these records and they can gear back up and hit it hard and give it everything and then go on the road and do that. But then in the downtime, it's like, what's making them be able to do this is that they're not necessarily like, oh, we're going to jump on the local shows or anything like that. Everything must be a planned out move, which is a shame that it loses a little bit of spontaneity, but it makes it so when the creative juices are flowing, that they're being absolutely exact with it for the most part, you know, some of these bands. And yeah, you know, some bands are going to have some missteps and they're still able to come back and maybe hit you the next time with something banging. But when we say the legacy bands, like, some people might take it as a knock or say, okay, boomer, but you know what? These are fucking lifers. Like, they're around. They care about this. They're not leeching off it. Like, what would be gained? Like, if you absolutely hated what you were doing, but this is the only place that would give you any kind of attention, I think you would die inside if that was the case. Like, I love that, like, AF will still come around and they'll be, you know, generally they're playing 21 and up at a lot of places, but when they play all ages, to see some like 14-year-old like up front at AF for the first time in their life, I think that's awesome. And I, you know, some people might think, ah, fuck off, like, that's cheesy, but you should look at yourself in the mirror and, like, if you think that someone who's given everything to this that you thrive in and enjoy now is like jaded. I mean, we can all tongue in cheek laugh at like certain things, and I'm sure people do about the things I say or the things I've done. Like, sometimes people are probably like, okay, old man. But the thing is, that's what makes hardcore so great, is that we've got these Mount Rushmore types that are still mixing with someone who is attempting to put out their first demo, or someone who's making their first zine, or someone who's posting a blog about something, that we're all in the same world together, I think enhances the fact that these, what would be called legacy bands, still drive through this beautiful world called hardcore.
Yeah, I want to jump in a couple of things before I go to Chris. And Chris, I'm sorry that you're just listening to us tonight. But yeah, like you mentioned Sick of It All being like the first of the great bands that puts out multiple records in the hardcore lane. I mean, we do have to say AF, but AF did change their style a fair amount. So like Victim in Pain and Cause for Alarm sounds so different. You almost can't. It's almost like different bands. You know what I mean? So, but Sick of It All putting out the three is pretty impressive. And then Madball has a run of four, you know, but the third Sick of It All album comes out the same year that Madball puts out their first LP. So like, that's pretty wild. Yeah. You know, when you talk about like, what's great about hardcore is like having like some, like a legacy band, like AF, being able to play on the same bill as like a new kid, or like, you know, functioning in the same world where a kid's posting a blog for the first time. I just want to say, like, sometimes, you know, with this pod, we try to like blend hardcore and punk a lot because we like older things. And I think that it's important to know like the punk roots of hardcore. And I also think that like a lot of punk is like relevant to hardcore, but hardcore is so much better for that reason, right? Like it is way more relatable. Like basically anyone in hardcore is like two phone calls away, right? And no one's too good for anything. Like it, even now in the year 2022, like everyone like pretty much keeps it real. You know what I mean? Where if you're talking about like punk, like that shit gets stupid. You know what I mean? Like good luck trying to track down someone from like in the Fat Records world, right? Like we've tried, we've joked around on the pod about like, you know, Smelly and Noodles and shit. And it's like cool. And I've talked with Smelly through email, but like trying to get like Fat Records people, like even just like writing their PR, it like no one responds. It's like bullshit rock star stuff. So hey, Fat Mike, fuck you. All right, Chris, what's your take?
I don't know if I had a take. I just lost it with that. I mean, getting back to Terror, I think I want to touch on something here real quick. Like, how many bands in the history of hardcore have released as many records as they have? Like, first and foremost. And then second, like, never, not one of those records ever experiments outside the genre. Yes, they push some boundaries a bit here or there, but it's not, you know, they never wrote in Out the Shizzy or a How We Rock, you know, like every record they've ever done is a hardcore record. And like, you know, they still, every record they sing about loving hardcore and like, you know, never once shown any intentions of straying from what they love. And that's so sick. And you know, obviously no disrespect to like SSD or Out the Shizzy, cause like those are, or sorry, or 7 Seconds, who wrote Out the Shizzy, cause those are great bands. And, you know, the people that I've met in 7 Seconds are incredible people as well. And they love hardcore and they love the shit too. But I think it just punctuates how, you know, true to the game, like Terror has kept it since day one. And that's super sick.
Yeah. I think they're so important too, in the way that like they're a bridge. Like I briefly mentioned like on last week's pod, like they're the one band that like can bridge together like a, like Mindset and Cold as Life, right? It's like both those bands can like Terror, and Terror can like both those bands, you know, like they're so important as like a middleman glue, you know, of like, again, this big, beautiful beast of hardcore. Like they're just such an integral, like central part of it that kind of like makes it all make sense.
No doubt.
Dan, wrap up the subject.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, you said the AF, like Victim in Pain and Cause for Alarm. Also the things with AF and Madball and stuff like that is that they've had last shows and they've gone away and then they've come back, and a cynical person would be like, oh, why are you doing that? You already played your last show. You know, I hear that about Earth Crisis as well. Fuck that. Like, if they're coming back, like, they never, like, stopped being interested in hardcore or stopped going to shows and stuff like that. Like, be glad that you're getting another chance to see AF or Earth Crisis or, you know, these, they're not, it's not like they're flying on Lear jets to, you know, come get all the money from a fest. It's like, no, they're in a van. They're coming through. They're, you know, they're fucking got like achy knees and hurt spines and everything. And they're getting up on stage and they're fucking giving everything. It's admirable. Like, I, you know, there is a ton of cynicism in hardcore, and that's what makes hardcore great in its own right, is that we're distrustful of the outside world and we're not going to tolerate any rock star bullshit. But aim your cynicism elsewhere, because we can see which people are coming back around for pure leech things, and we don't give them our attention or money, you know. Only the real get it. So that's how I feel about this topic. And I feel Terror is a very, very, very deserving of your attention, your money, and of being regarded as a hardcore great and a legacy band.
Yeah, and thank God AF got back together, because those shows were so good. And that's something that's got to give album rips. Like, it's one of the most underrated albums ever. I never hear anyone talk about it. And it rules so hard, you know? I still listen to it, like, once a month. But, dude,
I toured with them for, like, a month. Literally, like, one of the coolest bands I've ever toured with. Like the first thing they said to us, like, the first night that we joined them was, like, yo, if you see a sign that says, like, AF's food or, like, AF's room or whatever, like, what's ours is yours, like... Like, from day one, they were, you know, they're hardcore kids, you know, they live it. They've been living it a lot longer than any of the rest of us, but, like, they still, you know, they still do it, and that's super sick.
Yeah, I loved Roger's book because, like, you know, people reference Get in the Van a lot, and it's like, yeah, the first fucking 70 pages are cool when Rollins actually likes hardcore before 82, you know? Because, like, he's, like, a super fan of hardcore, and then it's, like, by the time he joins Black Flag, he's, like, over it. He's all miserable and shit, and it's, like, dude, are you a fan of this, like, music or not? You know what I mean? And Roger's book is, like, he goes on and on about, like, all this music he loves, and it's just, like, the dude's a, I mean, yeah, Mount Rushmore, you know, him and Stigma are there, so who are the other two, you know? I don't know. I don't want to make that choice, but they're, like, they're the ultimate legacy band, and I think that, like, goes to show that it's not a negative term. Like, hardcore is history and roots, and, like, what influences you, what gets you into it, what shapes your experience in hardcore, and, like, you know, they're a good one to always reference. Like, Ultimate Pain, perfect record.
Yeah, for sure. I always like to say, like, there's no bands that are more important than the bands that are doing it right now. Like, you know, Minor Threat, Bad Brains, those bands are very important, obviously, but, you know, there's no bands more important to the scene than the bands that are doing it right now. And that's extended to these bands that have been doing it for 40 years, you know, they're still doing it, and that's super sick.
All right, we're doing One's Gotta Go on four hardcore records. First up, All Out War, For Those Who Were Crucified. Next, Blood for Blood, Spit My Last Breath. Marauder, Master Killer, and rounding it out, Cold as Life, Born to Land Hard. Four hard-ass records. I love them all. This is going to be hard. Dan, what's your take?
Oh, I knew you were going to come to me first.
Chris, what's your take?
Oh, all right.
I don't care. Flip a coin.
Yeah, go for it, Chris.
All right. I'm going to bare my soul here a little bit. So every few years I go back to Born to Land Hard to see if maybe now I'm at the point in my life where it speaks to me. And I got to say, for more than 20 years, the answer has always been the same. It's just never grabbed me. I'm not a fan of the vocals. You know, it sounds like Freddie Madball if he was a goblin. and that was always kind of the deal breaker. So I went into this thinking, all right, one's gotta go. And I already know what that is. But guys, I'm happy to report that it finally happened. It yes. clicked for me. It yes. spoke to me. Yes. I love the vocals. They yes. sound like if Freddie Madball was a goblin, and I'm so here for it. Give me all the Freddie Goblin vocals because they sound gnarly. So I'm going to keep that one. I like it. I'm going to come back to it a lot more. It finally clicked for me, so I'm hyped on that. So next up, All Out War. For those who have Crucified, fantastic record. Probably my favorite of this bunch, so that one stand for sure. Marauder, Master Killer. I like it. I don't love it. Like, there's some fantastic songs, but I could probably live with, you know, like two or three of the songs from this. I actually like Ragmen more. But I'm going to keep that one too, and I'm going to throw out the Blood for Blood record. It's not bad. It's just, you know, Revenge on Society is kind of my go-to for this band, and so that's the one I'm more familiar with. I assumed that, you know, when I revisited this record that, you know, I've listened to it enough in my life that some of these songs would kind of ring a bell, and I was kind of surprised at how few parts I actually remembered, and I don't know if that speaks to, like, the memorableness of this record or just, you know, me, and that my default was always the, you know, the other record, but it's fine. It's good for what it is, like, particularly for this era. You know, probably if I would have listened to this a lot more back then, I would have a special place in my heart for it. But, you know, given all those things, you know, and given now that I love me some Goblin Madball, I'm gonna ditch the Blood for Blood record.
Is it a goblin voice, or is it that he just sounds like he's been cruising, like in the cold Detroit winter, smoking Marlboro Reds for a long time with, like, the windows up? You know, that's how I picture it. And I love his voice. It's so shredded and gnarly, and, like, God, it just works, because, like, and his flow is wild on some of those songs, because Cold as Life, they come in with, like, some 4-minute, 5-minute songs, which, like, you look at it on paper and you're like, stop it, dude, you know? But for some reason, like, they, like, breathe in the weirdest ways that just work. And then also, like, his vocal attack on them is, like, so juxtaposed, like, the way the song is. Because the songs are, like, bouncy, and they're long, so, like, they breathe. But then he just attacks it, like, so gnarly. And it's, like, it's just one of those weird things that works. And, like, no one can ever sound like them, because you can't replicate those dudes, that time, that, like, vibe, like, nothing. It's just, like, one of those, like, standalone magical albums that can never be replicated. So, like, Born to Land Hard stays no matter what. Jumping into Blood for Blood, Spit My Last Breath, dude, for 97, like, that record is so hard. It's my favorite Blood for Blood, like, by a million miles. The one on Victory sounds weird. Like, the guitar tone is strange, and it just takes me out of it. And then after that, they, like, start adding in the rock and roll stuff that people love, and I think that's what they get remembered for and what they're the most popular for. But I just don't like heavy rock and roll. It's just not a thing I like, you know, outside of, like, Motorhead. But then it just gets, I don't know, like, I'm fucking your mom, she's a blow up doll. Like, I just remember when that record came out, it was just like, oh God, like, this hurts, you know, like, cause I want Spit My Last Breath so bad. It's like, is them doing Sheer Terror, like, just as good, you know? Like, I like the whole Sheer Terror ride, but a lot of that is just because I think that Paul Bearer is, like, a, like, one of the great hardcore poets. But, like, they never replicate Just Can't Hate Enough Again. And this has songs that just have, like, the same, like, negative fury on it, and they're so good. Like, Piss All Your Hope and Dreams and Can't Heal are, like, two perfect hardcore songs. The only knock on this record is that second song, Maldito, is not good. It's very long, and it kind of fucks up the record in a way. You know, like the second track is like a long, drawn out, boring song, but the rest of the album is just like amazing. Like Solace, again, perfect hardcore song. A little long, but it's like that Coldest Lifestyle where somehow it like keeps my interest. And then Spit My Last Breath. We talked before about like the difference between very good hardcore bands and great hardcore bands is them doing a slow song that's good. Dude, tell me a better hardcore slow song than this. You know what I mean? Like, this might body malfunction, dude. Straight up. I love this song so much. And also to wrap it up, dude, Redemption Denied, like, it's a 9-minute, 3-chord song. That's so fucking punk, like straight up not giving a fuck. And it's like, it's this weird mesh up of like street punk and like suicidal tendencies. It's like very much like, all I wanted was a Pepsi. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, yeah, it was a myth made up by a liar. You know, I love it. Like the talking shit. And then I don't know. It's just so catchy and good. So this one stays All at War. This record is so brutal and good. They're like, we talk about like Unbroken using Slayer some, and then of course like Earth Crisis Firestorm do Slayer. It kind of is a mashup of the two because they're doing like the mosh Slayer plus a Slayers too. And some of this is so good. The problem with it is I think I wish a little bit more of the record was fast. Like that song Burning Season, the drummer is like kicking ass on that fast part. It's a perfect fast part. It's not like a straight fast part. It's like the fastest you can do the slow fast beat. And then like right into like that crazy chugga mosh tempo. It's like one of the greatest hard songs ever, you know, but there's not enough of that on this record. Like a lot of it is just like straight mosh part to Slayer part to mosh part. And I love it. They keep my interest. I like listening to this entire album, but compared to these other three, it's not there because Master Killer is good. God, just the recording and the songwriting and dude's voice is so out of this world. Like I listen to that Downfall of Christ song, like literally like once a week, just because I think it's like one of the greatest songs of all time. Right. Like we talk on the heart on this pod a lot. Like we're not talking like, oh, this is good for hardcore. We're talking it's good for all of music. Like, you want a song that bodies Stairway to Heaven? Downfall of Christ by Marauder. Like, straight up, what's up? Like, why are they talking about this song in Rolling Stone? You know, like, it's maddening to me, you know, in my caveman brain. So I'm losing All Out War, which sucks because it's one of my favorite metal hardcore records of the 90s. But it is what it is. And I'm glad it's your favorite, Chris. It makes me feel a little better. Dan, what's your take?
Well, let's go back to me in like 95, 96, hearing Master Killer for the first time and it just being too hard for me then. I'll say that. Like, I was like, oh, this is just the most tough guy thing I've ever heard in my life. Well, yeah, it's fucking ground zero for this shit. Like, it's perfect now. You know, I've come to appreciate it and love it a lot more. Also, Downfall of Christ, I used to, because this was right as I was, you know, lots of things would be taped for you. So that's how you're first getting into them. And I got this tape, and this is around the time that tons of Face Down Records bands and stuff are playing in the San Diego scene. So you're forced to be around people giving their testament and all of that bullshit. And so when this song like was playing on a tape, I was like, is he asking if I'm down for Christ? Like over and over again. I'm like, they don't seem like that kind of band. Anyway, Marauder stays. It is ground zero for the way bands are still trying to sound right to this day. 30 years on, you know, it's perfect. The song Master Killer, it's just, and you know, the fact that they're referencing the same shit Wu-Tang was like right around the same time, like absolutely amazing. Now, All Out War, I didn't like this when it first came out. But listening, and I will say, I never really revisited, because I saw them a few times and it just seemed like their songs were so long when they played. Maybe because they were playing right before a band that I was really excited to see, so it makes it seem like it's even more. But listening to this in the doing this project, it's like, fuck, like that like hammering part on "For Those Who Were Crucified" is so sick. It's everything, you know, it's a great recording. It's incredible. So it's not quite safe yet, though. Cold as Life is safe because, yes, there are long songs on it, and a couple of them do drag. But it's like Zach says, they'll go from part to part that it has like this weird flow, and then they'll hit you with a 1 minute, 3 second banger, you know, and then there'll be something else, and they're mixing it up. And it is just, the funny thing is, like, when you think about Cold as Life, unless, you know, when you first think about them, you think, especially because I heard, you know, songs about them on Set It Off before I'd actually dipped my toes in, you know, so I expected them to be like so much more deeper. And then, like you say, you've got the Salacious Crumb style, like manic, hard as fuck, like raspy Crypt Keeper vocal that is just what it is. And it, and then some of the lyrics are really rad, like the song Ski Mask and a 45, like talking about being a junkie and like, yo, I have to fucking do this because I need my fix. So, you know, run your wallet, like there's a fucking gun in your face. And, you know, the great thing is, you know, there's plenty of cosplay in hardcore. That there's no cosplay there. Like it's from a past of either being a junkie or dealing with junkies, and it is like really fucking hard. So Cold as Life staying. So now we're going All Out War versus Blood for Blood. Now Zach just talked about Spit My Last Breath, the actual title track, being, you know, such a crazy, almost like, just the wildest like approach for like a slow song. And when it drops out and it's just the drums and a little bit of bass hitting, and then they're going back and forth doing the vocals, and then the Halloween theme on guitar comes in. Yes. It's so fucking rad. And the most like YOLO crazy shit that you're like gonna hear. It's like really, really wild. The only thing that I like Living in Exile era Blood for Blood better than this. Just the like, here we go. And like just the very, very large, like insanely like built up moments that happen on that record are so, I don't know, they're really fucking good. The thing about this LP is that, like, you've got Piss All Over Your Hopes and Dreams, fucking epic. Maldito, not good. Can't Heal, decent. Soulless, decent. You know, long. Fade, long. You know, and then, like Zach said, Redemption Denied, fucking... What? See, I have to let Blood for Blood stay because of the reach, the not being held by a formula. They are saying, well, this song's going to be on there, and then this song's going to be on, yeah, and we're going to do this spoken word music, like, like crazy, like almost film noir, like insane hardcore song. So I'm gonna keep Blood for Blood. I'm gonna begrudgingly let All Out War go, even though it impressed me so much more listening to it now than it ever had in the past. So it was really close, but Blood for Blood just being almost maniacal in the way that they put this record together gets them to stay.
Yeah, just a couple of things I want to touch on there. It's like, dude, Coldest Life lyrics are really good, right? Like, if you just read that Ski Mask into 45, like, pull it up, you know, the internet works. Coldest Life, Ski Mask into 45 lyrics. Like, that's a wild-ass poem, dude. Like, what the fuck? And then the way he flows it onto that song is just like, good God, these guys are out of this world. You know, the other thing is like that Blood for Blood record, it sounds so big and so good, especially for the era, 97. And I think I had the CD like back when it came out, and I think I saw in the liner notes that they like recorded it in 3 days, which is pretty wild to get something that sounds that big at that time in 3 days. And I just used to always trip out on them doing that Redemption Denied song. Like, how the fuck do you do that in the studio? So in 97, there's like no punching in. Right? You got to, like, at least the drummer, his track has to be straight. So it's like he has to do this 9-minute song without fucking up. Like, and it's the same thing over and over and over and over. Like, how does he ever get that right? Like, it's still a mind fuck to me. You know what I mean? Like, how do you do it? You know, but it's so classic, and they must have just been so insane at that time. Like, they pull off this song, dude. It's hardcore magic, straight up. All right, Chris, final thoughts.
I got a Marauder story.
Yeah.
So we played a show with Marauder and Agents of Man, a couple shows with them actually down in, Alabama and, Birmingham, Alabama, and I think Memphis. And, first of all the dudes in Marauder were super cool, like super nice. And after the show was over, you know, everyone's breaking down merch or whatever, and I'm brushing my teeth, and Jorge comes up to me, he's like, "Yo, what is that? What is that shit?" And I'm like, toothbrush? And he goes, "Damn, I haven't seen one of those in months."
That rules. Yeah. I seen him play Shake Cafe to like 50 people, like maybe 5 years ago, but it was fucking ill, you know?
Yeah, I saw him like maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, and they were super, super good.
Yeah, so good. Still. Daniel, final thoughts before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, we weren't lying when we said, you know, hardcore pod. Like, these are some pretty damn brutal LPs. And if you're ever having a bad mood, this will send you spiraling, this playlist of all of these tracks.
Yeah everyone check out the playlist. That's right. Dude, I was listening to this playlist the other night in Target, and I was like, God damn.
That's a dangerous place to be listening to this playlist. You know,
with my headphones, I'm like, if someone takes the Last Impossible Burgers, there's going to be some shit. You know?
I got a question.
Yeah.
Do you think Ben's still listening? Or do you think he was like, after like 5 minutes, he's like, I don't care about any of these bands. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Hey, Ben, it's at the 54-minute mark. If you send me a text message and say 54, I'll send you some records. And don't anyone tip him off. We want to know if Ben's really listening. So text me 54 and I'll hook
you
up.
Send him some 25 to Life records.
He's going to get 30 Somali Pirate 7-inches.
The fight lasts for hours. Each ram battering the other dozens of times.
Head to head.
All right, we are going head to head. Two records that came out within a couple years of each other. One, No Warning, the LP, Ill Blood. The other one, The Mighty Death Threat, and their LP, Peace and Security. Head to head, Chris, which one takes it?
Well, to quote a band that we just talked about, Life is pain. This one's brutal. this is a 10 versus a 10 for me, like straight up. These are two perfect hardcore records. My opinion on this may change based on my mood or, you know, which of these bands I saw most recently. Death Threat means the world to me. Like, Peace and Security, what a perfect, like, just moshcore record. And, like, some of the biggest sweethearts that you'll ever meet in this band. I love this record so much, and it hurts me so much to say this, that I think I'm going to go with Ill Blood at this particular moment in time. It's just such a great record. The recording is unreal. The riffs are so good. They're so catchy. Like, you listen to this and you're going to be humming the riffs like afterwards. I think the first time I saw him, one of the first times I saw him at Posse Numbers, they had played a couple hours earlier. And then I ran into Matt, like, just in the back of the venue. He's like, "What's up, dude?" And I had Ill Blood stuck in my head, like, as he came up to me and said, "What's up?" And I think I just, like, blurted in his face, "Ill Blood, Cower." And he's like, but yeah, it's just so catchy. Like, the vocals are so pissed off, but, like, they have the right amount of, like that 77 style snottiness, like, thrown into them, that it just, it gives it so much character. Yeah, that's all I'm really going to say on these records. Like, everything's perfect from the art. Like, both of these records, like, the covers look fantastic. Both of these are probably my favorite record of each of these bands. But I'm going to take Ill Blood for this one.
Daniel, what's your take?
My take is, Chris and I are going to roll up on you and throw you off the Bay Bridge, because putting these two head to head is like giving me a Reggie versus Stella. Like, I think, In Control LPs aside, these are my two favorite hardcore records of the aughts. Like, pretty much these two, Stop and Think and In Control, like, those are probably my absolute top five there. You know?
Come on.
Like,
American Nightmare, Bane, Carry On, Count Me Out.
Oh, yeah, Count Me Out's in there. You're right. Count Me Out's in there, but...
I'll take top 50. What's up?
These two are in there, like, absolute... Here's how I'm going to break it down. Ill Blood, you have zero skippers. You have absolute perfection from start to finish. In Short Fuse, you might have the best hardcore song of the aughts. They go and they record with Dean Baltunis from Wrecking Crew and who's done stuff with Supertouch in the past. And he is perfecting how good they were on 7-inch, and him and the band together were honing, like, just this absolute perfect aggressive hardcore LP with bounce. I mean, it's an absolute love letter to Madball, of course, but it's framing it in 2002. It's taking the best to Set It Off and the best of Hold It Down and, like, fusing it. And I know you're, like, thinking, shut the fuck up, this is not even touching either of those records. That, you being Zach, not you, the listener. The listener's like, you're right, Ill Blood is fucking epic.
Not the Saint listener. We love you all. Just Zach, that asshole over there.
But so you've got perfection on one side. The artwork is perfect. The way it came out, everything about it. Bridge Nine did a great job. everything about it is perfect, except for, you know, some of the outside of the record type stuff with it, perhaps, you know, like being dicks at posse numbers and stuff like that, whatever. That's just what it was. Now you go to Peace and Security, and this is a record that just emits soul and pain and the ability to translate that in a very imperfect way that gets right under your skin and makes you love it beyond belief. Like, the things he does vocally and the way some of these lines are written should not work. They should be almost laughed at because they're coming in such a way that you are not used to hearing, and you are not, and some people will like take it that way and never give it the thing, the chance or whatever. But when you listen to Death Threat and you hear the soul and the flow and the swagger and the pain and the ability to get across these things that Aaron is like transmitting, along with some of the most hard, cold sounding hardcore, it's just like, it's like fucking Illmatic. Like, it's just, it's coming in such an imperfect, perfect way that when you hear like the pain you caused me, like that stutter step that he does with the vocals, and then he's got the three different voices. He's got the really hard one. He's got the pulling a little bit foot off the pedal hard voice. And then he's got the, you know, the absolute flow swagger, like, you know, I ain't got money, you know, but I still make ends. Like that absolute perfect like ability to hook you with the personality. Like, if any other person was singing for that band and was just doing a straightforward vocal performance, even though the music is fucking great, it still could be an also ran hardcore record. But the fact that Aaron Knuckles is singing and embodying everything about it from the start of the LP to the end is just allowing you into his world and into his delivery, and it's imperfectly, absolutely perfect. So do I go with absolute perfection and pure genius hardcore songwriting created in a lab and a record I listen to every other week since it came out, pretty much, Ill Blood? Or do I go for pure soul of Peace and Security, and I'm gonna, by one sliver of a hair, Death Threat Peace and Security is just it. Going into this, I was gonna say Ill Blood, and just weighing it up between the two in my own like mind fighting with it, Peace and Security wins.
Dude, Peace and Security is one of the greatest hardcore records ever. It's like coming out of Satisfaction is the Death of Desire, the Hatebreed record. Like, they have a couple of dudes from that band still, or at least they had them on the demo. This album sounds so brutal, but then you're right. Like, Aaron's delivery is just like next level. Some of the love songs, the hardcore, are like the greatest things ever. The, you know, This Is Us, You Don't Understand It, he's able to like put it poetically into songs where, you're right, if anyone else delivered it, it would like eat his dick. But for some reason, like, he just has this mic magic. I remember, I think it was Snoop Dogg was talking about being in the studio when he did like the Nothing But a G thing with Dre. And he was just like, Dre said to like hit like the little notes, right? Like the Nothing But a G thing, baby. And like to him, it didn't make any sense. But then when he heard it in the record, it was just like, good God, like it works so well. And it's like Aaron just has that in him. It's like that soul, right? Like the betrayed and left alone. Like he just hits these like little notes. And it's like, oh my God, no one can do it like that. His delivery is like so next level. And like, you know, we talk about like people having like character come across like in the record, you know, like, or, you know, enthusiasm, or someone has charisma. This is just like pure soul coming across. And there's nothing like it. And like juxtaposed with like how brutal the music sounds, it's just like one of those magical things that like solidifies why I think hardcore is the greatest music in the world. You know, I absolutely love this. And so like, it was a rude matchup. I did the matchup because I knew it would be hard for you guys. This isn't hard for me at all. I think that Ill Blood sounds amazing. And there's like tracks on it, especially like the last song, Ill Blood, like the mid-tempo banger. I love how the gang sound. It's like one of my favorite things about the record. Like it's just so goon. Like it's almost like unintelligible. It's like, you know, like when Strife does One Truth, it sounds like they got like the whole Westlake football team doing like the gangs. Like they sound so big and ignorant. And this is like, it almost like out ignorance it. Cause like you can't understand it at all. And it just gives like a feeling of chaos that I love. And just, yeah, the riffery is insane. And we should talk, like, there's a lot of threads that run through this pod tonight, you know, like, talking Terror in the beginning. Well, Jordan plays with Terror still, and Jordan wrote this record, or at least the majority of it, I believe. So that's cool. Also talking All At War in the last section, Scott's previous band Buried Alive and All At War played Oxnard at Laser Star in the year 1999. And yeah, like only 30 people showed up. Where were you all? Where were all you fools? You know, like they should have.
I was at the Seattle show.
That's right. Yeah, that was a sick tour, you know, but yeah. It's cool that hardcore's come around, you know, and like people come out to shows and shit. But yeah, this one's pretty easy for me. I'm going Piece of Security All Day. I think Ill Blood is a great record on paper. It's totally cool. In Control played Positive Numbers in the year 2002 and No Warning played. And the singer was, he was like either pouring a 40 over his head or like champagne on his head, some big bottle of booze. And I was just like, ah, this is so silly. Cause like people don't remember, but in the 90s, like tacking Straight Edge onto your band was like, I don't know. It was a permission slip for a lot of like generic, safe, white male kids to like your band. You had like a built-in crowd of like kids that would like your band no matter like how sorry you were. And the fact that my bands never had like that, I think I was always kind of a little jealous of it and bitter about it. Daniel can probably attest to that. Yeah. And so like when I see people that like benefited from like that Straight Edge rub and then like sell out in such like a lame way, like it kind of rubs me it rubs me weird. Like I knew you were going to do that. Like, but why do you have to be like, I don't know, like you're a diva on both sides, you know? And I always thought that was weird. And that's a silly thing for me to like judge someone for something that happened 20 years ago. But, hey, I'm an idiot. So, you know, it is what it is. I'm sure he's a nice, well-adjusted person now. That is a very cool. So, but yeah, I'm going Death Threat All Day just because like the sincerity runs through, and I can't imagine Aaron pouring a 40 over his head. So that's that. Dan, final thoughts on this matchup?
Both of these should be in everyone listening's collection, and you know, enjoy them because they both these records speak to me on a massive level. Like Ill Blood, like we were listening to it at my work today and my coworker was like, whoa, calm down, because I was like moshing in the middle of the shop.
Yeah, I chose Short Fuse and Ill Blood. Do you think that's representative of the record?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, and then I took Disgrace and Outcast for Death Threat. You okay with that?
Yeah. I mean, Dead at Birth should be on there, probably.
Everyone knows Dead at Birth. First song on the record, right? I want to give Outkast some love.
Okay.
Because that final, the final mosh sequence, dude. Good God. Hitting the riff like on the toms and then switching to the hi-hat when the vocals come in. Dude.
Chris is moshing right now just hearing you sing the riff.
I believe it. Chris, final thoughts on this.
I was going to say, Dan was in the toy store crowd killing some little kid trying to buy G.I. Joe's. Or He-Man, sorry.
Or Lemmy.
No, G.I. Joe's is right. We don't have the He-Man license anymore. We have the G.I. Joe license, though.
Ah, all right, then. Yeah, last comments. For the record, those backup, the gang backups on Ill Blood are Coward, You're Running, Trapped, Time Bomb.
Yeah.
When will it explode?
Hell yeah. That song rips, dude. So everyone check these records out. Check them out on the playlist, 185milessouth.com. Hit that playlist link at the top of the page and listen to the music that we're talking about, because that is what it's all about.
Side A versus Side B.
All right, we're doing Side A, Side B on 25 to Life, Keeping It Real. And yeah, I wanted to talk this record, and now I regret not having Ben here to punish him. God damn it. But it is what it is. Came out originally as a CD on We Bite in the year 1996, but it got repressed as a 10-inch, the inferior vinyl format, in France in the year 2005. And you know I got it. It's in my shameful 10-inch section. But it is what it is. It's three songs on each side. And yeah, I just want to talk this. 25 to Life is such a weird band because they were big and pretty important in the 90s. And then obviously they fell off pretty hard. But I do think that like they had a run. I think that this record is so good. The way it's recorded is so big, so monotone, that I think it's still worth like revisiting to listen to the music. And then also, I think the one that follows it, Strength Through Unity, is still really good and holds up. So I think these two records are notable. And 25 to Life is such a hard band to follow because, you know, the demo that's on 7-inch is, like, very available. It's, like, kind of the perennial dollar bin record, you know? So a lot of people have in their collection, and the recording's pretty bad. And also, like, the self-titled 7-inch, like, the songs are good, but the recording's pretty bad. But like these two records I'm talking about sound so good. The songs are very entertaining and they like correlate a lot to like what's going on today in modern hardcore. Like it's there. And then after these records, it falls off like big time. Like the LP that follows Strength Through Unity, like they don't get like a big recording. And so it doesn't sound as good. And then like everything after that is just like rough. It's like full kind of scab, like they don't have like the big players, but the players on this record and Strength of Unity is like, these dudes are serious players. They're playing great metal hardcore, in my opinion. So I want to dive into this record and put a couple songs on the playlist. Keeping it real, Dan, side A or side B?
Side C.
That's fair.
No, it's funny because there are two songs that I'm extremely familiar with because of my love of the NYHC documentary. This one goes out to Use Guys because Use Guys knows what's up. That would be Wise 2, The Game.
The Game.
From the Drugs to the Beatdowns.
To the Talk Behind Your Sadler's Back.
Yeah. Now try and pick that out of the lines that are being performed. I bet you can't. Or if you can, I'll see you at trivia next Monday. It's funny, like those are the two big standouts for me, Wise to the Game and the Lowdown. But Keeping It Real is pretty catchy too. Separate Ways and End the Hate, they don't really like stand out to me.
Even after that trivia performance, Dan, on End the Hate, Vile Fade, End the Hate, Vile Fade.
Well, that's the thing that's so frustrating about it is like it's a part where he's actually doing like a punchy type vocal, so you should be able to pull it out, but you can't. This is just, you chose this record just to torture me more. But I'm going side B because the lowdown, Short Fuse is good, and then Keeping It Real. I got to keep it real and have Keeping It Real as my choice. So side B.
Get it. All right, Chris, side A, side B.
I thought we originally were going to do the side A versus side B of the original format. So I just listened to one side of the CD and decided I like that better than the other. But
you like the label side, not the music side?
No, I think so when I listened to 25 to Life, I realized that I don't actually like them as much as I think I do. It's definitely a time and a place band. Like Zach said, they were super important for when they were around. Like, there weren't a lot of bands. I don't know. Like, the metal thing was huge. The youth group thing was kind of starting to pop off a little bit. But I felt like the New York hardcore thing was kind of few and far between. And so, like, when 25 to Life came around, it was kind of like, it was almost like we got another AF record, you know? And so that's why I love this band, is because of that, like, time and place where it was like, awesome, we get this new, like, you know, quote unquote AF record. But like the reality of it is like, they're really only probably like maybe a handful of tracks that I always go back to. Definitely the demo, the three tracks on the demo. And certainly, like, Wise to the Game is probably at the top of that list. So I think that combined with, I always loved the chorus part on Separate Ways where he's like, there's no time to fucking waste. Like, it's kind of like half song. It's like one of the few lines that you can actually understand what he's saying. I'm going to go side A, and mostly it's on the strength of Wise to the Game, but also that chorus in Separate Ways is sick.
Wise to the Game is like a great song to start the record with. Jesus, it's just like an open E or whatever they're like tuned down to with like a slow Z. Bounce drum. Yeah. It just sounds so good to like put the record on and it's like, doom, da, doom, doom. It's like, that song is so good. The next two songs have parts I like, but I don't love them. Like, Separate Ways, I think, starts with that weirdo bass part. It's like, what the fuck is this?
That's such a time and place bass line for sure.
Yeah, like that part is pretty wild, but then the song is kind of whatever. In the Hate, is that chorus sounds hilarious, so I kind of love it. In the Hate, Bonford. It's pretty sick, dude. Actually, I'm not going to – he says something different the second time. And Dan, don't study it because it might come up. that's side A. Second side is pretty flawless, dude. The Lowdown, Can You Accept It? Was Going Down. Can You Accept It? The Lowdown. It's pretty ill, dude. If it didn't have, like, that line, like, I don't know. That song is not that great. But whatever. It has that line, so it's pretty great. Short Fuse is the banger. Wise to the Game and Short Fuse are the two best songs of this record. They're the ones I single out. Keeping It Real is classic for what it is. And, like, obviously it works in the live setting because it's basically a long song. It should have been a 2-minute song, but they did it twice, you know, so it's a 4-minute song. And so it works well in, like, the live setting as their hit. You know, it's like, dude, whatever. You see 7 Seconds play, it's like, fuck it, play Young Till I Die twice. You know, I'm not mad. So, like, they just did it here in a song and recorded it that way because they knew. I mean, they, from all accounts, they played, like, every weekend back then, right? So yeah. Here's their hit. Why not have it be 4 minutes, you know? Because otherwise they were going to have to play it twice. So, whatever. The song's kind of long, but it's pretty sick for what it is. Just, like, so simple. Dun da 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 dun da 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 dun da 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 keeping it real. Anyway, I'm side B. This thing is sick. Again, time and a place. I'm not saying like the band, but I'm saying like this record and Strength or Unity have big moments, and you know, you can't sweep everything under the rug. We never knew any of these people personally, so we don't have any sort of connection that way, being from California. So it is what it is. I just like the music. And
I think another thing I think that's worth calling out is like the imagery and the aesthetics that this band really leaned into are huge, like all over hardcore right now. Like anyone that has like a hoodie dude with a gun or like a spray paint can, you know, crappily drawn, but purposefully crappily drawn. Like, you know, this, it's all from this band, you know?
Right. There's a lot of bands that did it, but this is the one that like pushed it, right, and took it around the world, you know? So however you feel about that, like it's there today, dude. It's all over the place. So, you know, I just say, check it out, because it's a part of hardcore history. And it's important to know all the building blocks got us here, whether they are positive or negative, you know? So anyway, Dan, final thoughts on this episode as a whole.
We fell victims to your lies once before. This was a great ep. Like, I love talking this, you know, kind of categorizing a lot of this stuff and looping it together based off of an epic new release. And letting us talk about some of the stuff that I urge the listener out there, because when I was a younger Corman, I would turn away from everything this style. Not necessarily like Terror, but I would turn away from a lot of this harder stuff. And then, you know, all through the 90s, I liked all the like straight edge vegan metal stuff, but the tougher stuff, I used to think like I didn't like that being in hardcore, because the way people who want to impress these kind of bands act at shows used to absolutely like turn me off. And you know what? There's always going to be idiots, and they're going to be into all kinds of music, and they're going to ruin times, and it's just up to everyone to not allow it to happen. And you should dive into this kind of hardcore as well. Even if it doesn't speak to you, give it a whirl, give it a listen. Like some of these records that we've talked about on the One's Gotta Go, and some of the, and especially the Head to Head, like these are incredible albums. And yeah, you might have a moment where you're like, oh, I don't like that shit. That's tough guy shit. Fucking drop that and listen to the music. Cause even if they are talking about hard things, some people come from really fucking hard lives, and that's what they're reflecting. They're speaking their truth. Like, listen to this music, cause it is fucking good. And it might just get under your skin, and it might just give you a new lane and something new to appreciate.
Yeah, I love this playlist. I've listened to it a ton of times in just like the last 2 days, because, you know, originally for the episodes, I put like the full records on so we can do our homework. And then a couple days ago, I stripped it down to just two songs of every band. And now I've been listening to it on loop ever since. And so everyone, check out the playlist, put it in your headphones, and go walk Target and Mad Dog some foos. Chris, final thoughts on this episode.
I just want to bring it around full circle. Like, we talked about Terror being kind of a bridge band. And I think, you know, one thing that people that are in hardcore, you know, like younger kids that are gotten to hardcore after kind of Terror maybe don't realize is like, I think there was a lot of like, there's a lot of different scenes within the hardcore scene, and you know, there still are to a degree, but like for the most part, like it kind of like wasn't okay for like, you know, a straight edge youth crew kid to listen to, you know, Cold as Life, or like, you know, a mosh metal kid to listen to Ebullition Band or whatever. And I think, you know, Terror kind of like smashed down a lot of those walls, and I mean, as cheesy as it is to say, like they kind of made it okay for like more like fast hardcore kids to like a band like a Death Threat. I don't know.
I don't know.
I just want to bring around full circle and kind of just like talk about the impact that Terra had on this hardcore scene, where it went from, you know, I mean, Ojai shows have always been amazing, but it went from, you know, overnight almost like kids circle pitting and stage diving and sing along to like everyone just like beating the bloody hell out of each other. Like obviously in a you know, a fun way, but I don't know, you could see certainly like the impact that they had.
I'll go even further and say that Death Threat actively put their feet into that faster, like straight up core scene to be like, no, we love your bands. We're going to play with you, you know, even prior to Terra like forming, you know?
So, no, 100% is both of them, dude. It's both of them around the same time, because it's Death Threat around that year. Like it's whenever the B9. So the Death Threat record originally comes out on, I think, Triple Crown as a CD, right? Yeah. When it gets re-released on B9, it gives like this whole swath of kids like a permission slip that it's okay to like this band that they wouldn't have fucked with before. And that lines up around the same time that like Terror hits. And then you're combining like Buried Alive with Carry On. It's another permission slip. And I really think that those two bands are so important in like creating like this current hardcore environment we have, where it isn't all the different lanes like the 90s. Right, like people can like everything. Dan, sorry for cutting you off there.
No, I think that's completely valid. The Death Threat comes out with that trio of releases on Bridge 9 that spans the thing. So it's Shark Attack, Death Threat, and I think the AN 7-inch, and it all three of them like come out right around the same time, and it just is like three epic releases, three slightly different takes, but eaten up by everyone. And yeah, like a whole new bridging the gap stuff starts happening, you know?
Yeah, and my timeline might be a little off. Like, I don't know how much later the B9 came out after like the CD almost, comes out.
Almost instantly. I think it was 99 okay. for the CD, 2000 for the LP. On B9.
Fair enough. And then like, you know, I saw him within a year of each other, right? And like in the same scene. And it's like, we seen Death Threat in like, finally say 99, and there's like 30 kids. And then after the B9 release, it's like, there's 200 kids. And it's like, that's great. It's great for the band, but it's like, it's one of those times to like internalize and like, look at like what's really going on here. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be great if like all these people were here all along, right? Like, I don't know. There was great bands that were playing like a little tougher hardcore. Like I go back, I think about the Clubberlang demo a lot. Like, dude, for straightforward hardcore, like that thing was so good. And it's like, I don't know why it didn't like all the, like the straight edge hardcore kids that were reverential to, you know, New York hardcore when Floor Punch is doing something, like, why aren't they lashing onto that? Like, because it's like double ironic, because I think that all those dudes are like good friends. Like, what the fuck?
Well, there's an interesting thing that's actually behind all of this, even behind the Bridge 9 thing, is the fact Matt Pike is booking Death Threat, but he's also booking Bane, and he's booking AN, and he's booking Striking Distance as well. You know, like all of these things where now they're starting to kind of push these together, especially in the tri-state area. So the bands are starting to play. People are talking about on the B9. You know, there's a whole like social, you know, documentary you could do on it to an extent. But I agree with you. Like at one point, this was considered not cool. And then at another point, it was considered cool. But the music wins. I mean, We're 22 years on from Peace and Security coming out. We're 20 years on from Ill Blood. Like, just dive into those two LPs. Amazing stuff.
Yeah, also, the Last Days CD from Death Threat got re-released on 10-inch a couple years ago, and I didn't see it when it happened, and now it's impossible to get. So if anyone out there has an extra Last Days 10-inch, I will buy it off you, or you can hook it up because you love me.
And in the dreaded 10-inch section.
Dude, but yeah, I know. It's like the last 10-inch I want, you know? It's like I'm going to never buy a 7-inch again. I said like the Minor Threat box set was the finals, and that's a pretty good like – or the Discord stuff was the last. That's fine. I would like this to be my last 10-inch ever, but I really, really need it because I love that record so much.
I feel like it's appropriate that they released it on a 10-inch because it was on the dreaded like clear CD as well. That you can't play it today in modern like car stereos.
Right. It has to be like one of the ones that you lock it into the bass.
Yeah.
Dude, hell yeah. All right. Shout out to the worst formats ever. Shout out to everyone. Dan, where can the people find you at?
You can find me moshing in a toy store to Ill Blood and also on Instagram at Southport Instagrammer.
Chris, where can the people find you?
You find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChrisWilliams51. And you can also follow me on the Change Twitter account, which is Change NWHC. Ram does the Instagram. That's not me. But follow him too. And then the last thing I have to say, in the immortal words of Aaron Knuckles, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lates.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I still got to go. And then you can say it again.
You can just move it.
Don't make me edit.
Just have Roger bump it.
Hey, Roger, hook me up. Now you can find me. The best way to get in touch with me is 185milesouth@gmail.com. I respond to everyone. I might be late, but I promise you I will get back to you. The DMs get a little weirder, but I'm on Instagram, 185milesouth. Instagram, same on Twitter, whatever weird world that is. And then also on Instagram, Zach Retaliate, if you want to get at me personally, what's up? And then you know Retaliate is the best on Instagram. All right, Chris, hit it again.
Hardcore is what we're all about. Dan?
Someone hit the lates.
I wanted to set up Dan to sing drinking, smoking weed, and fucking hanging out. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lates.